I have resolution 23-422, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Kekinen. Be it resolved that council of the corporation of the township of McKeller is hereby reconvened into regular open session of council at 6:35 PM. Call the question. All those in favor? I guess we have to record it.
Councilor Ronan Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekinen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays. Ms. Carey? Resolution 23-423, moved by Councilor Kekinen, second by Councilor Haskin. Be it resolved that the council of the corporation of the township of McKeller does hereby accept the reports, recommendations, and directions arising from the closed session held June 20th, 2023. Call the question.
Councilor Ronan Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekinen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. It's 5 yeas, no nays. Carried. In the spirit of reconciliation and cooperation, we wish to acknowledge that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and the Mississauga people. Its boundaries fall within the Robinson-Huron Treaty of 1850 and the Williams Treaty of 1923. We are grateful to live here, and we thank all the generations of people who have taken care of this land for thousands of years. To honor the suffering of Indigenous people and the love and wisdom they have carried for thousands of years, we pledge to work in community and harmony with each other and the environment we inhabit and work towards truth and reconciliation. Now, if you were here earlier, we had moved some agenda items around, so we're now moving 15.1, I believe, up to after the public meeting. There is no public meeting, so prior to any delegation, we're moving a planning matter 15.1 forward. We have resolution 23-424, moved by Councilor Zulak, seconded by Councilor Kekinen. Be it resolved that the council of the corporation of the township of McKeller does hereby approve the proposed consent to create one new rural lot, R lot 23, concession 3, as applied for by Arnold Crosman and application number B12/2023 McKeller, subject to the following conditions. Number one, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland dedication in accordance with the township's fee bylaw. Number two, 911 addressing at the time of issuance of an entrance or building permit. Number three, verification from the director of operations that the new lot can accommodate an entrance onto Center Road. And number four, payment of applicable planning fees.
I'm sorry, Dave. I must have confused. I was waiting for number nine to declare a conflict on this side. Did we do number nine?
Yeah.
Oh, we did at the very beginning.
Oh, did we? Oh,
so I just carried over, but
okay.
You can declare it now. That's fine.
I'll declare a conflict of interest on this 15.1 due to being related to one of the applicants.
Okay.
And I'll leave the room.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We have Patrick Christie here to speak to it, if you wish. Is it fairly straightforward? Or?
It is. Good evening, Mayor and Council. Here we have a rural lot, and Mr. Crosman wishes to create one new rural lot on Center Road.
I was wondering that maybe this was done previously. We often have the requirement in that there be 10 meters from the center line. If there are any property that he would own, that turned to the township, or has that already been taken care of with previous severances that you might be aware of?
I believe that should be included as a condition.
Okay, just to cover ourselves, I think. I know it's a well-traveled road, but there are situations where the township doesn't own the actual road, so. little different approach in this too. If there are any questions from the public, we won't wait until the end of the meeting. So if you wish to comment either in person or by Zoom. Hearing nothing then, we had the amendment. Number 5 was added that any portion of Center Road, 33 feet or 10 meters from the center line, be conveyed to the township. So we'll vote first of all on the amendment. This is going to give you a... we'll vote on the resolution as amended. That way you won't have to do two votes. It'll be a recorded vote as well because Nick is on Zoom.
Councillor Mike Kekkonen?
Yes.
Councillor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councillor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. That's carried. We've also moved 15.2 earlier on the agenda. So we have resolution 23-425 moved by Councillor Haskin, seconded by, seconded by Councillor Zulak. Be it resolved that the Council of the Corporation of the Township of Keller does hereby approve the proposed consent to create one new rural lot on Wendy's Lane as applied for by 216-5268 Ontario Limited in application number B14/2023 in Keller, subject to the following conditions. Number 1, payment of a fee in lieu of parkland dedication. Number 2, obtaining confirmation from the Director of Operations that there are suitable driveway locations for the severed and retained lots onto Wendy's Lane. 3, that any portion of Wendy's Lane, 33 feet or 10 meters from the center line, be conveyed to the township. 4, 911 addressing at the time of issuance of an entrance or building permit. And 5, payment of applicable planning fees. Again, turn it over to Patrick. If you any comments on that one?
No real comments. Really straightforward.
David, any questions from council? Questions from the public in person or on Zoom? Hearing none, we'll call the question.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Kekkonen?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Moore?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays, carried. Move back to delegations and presentations. And we have Mr. Pahapil representing Associates Chartered Accountants, presentation of draft 2022 financial statements. Now, I think that, Mike, too, depending on how long you plan on standing, you can probably sit at the seat. And okay.
Consolidated financial statements presents fairly the financial position of the Corporation of the Township of McKellar. We conducted our audit in accordance with Canadian Generally Accepted Auditing Standards. Management is responsible for the preparation and fair presentation of the consolidated financial statements. It is our objective as part of the audit to be able to obtain sufficient appropriate audit evidence regarding the financial information of the entities or business activities within the municipality to express an opinion on the consolidated financial statements. We are responsible for the direction, supervision, performance of the group audit, and we remain responsible for our audit opinion. In summary, this is a clean auditor's report. This 20 years ago, this report was three paragraphs, not a page and a half, but it's the sign of the times. In any event, so it's a clean auditor's report. The audit went very smoothly. Rochon was extremely organized. The accounts are well kept from an auditor's perspective, certainly. I'd ask you to turn to the consolidated statement of financial position, which is page 4. And I'll sort of make some summary comments here, some highlights on the financial position of the Township of McKellar as of December 31st, 2022. As we can see, cash increased during the year from $2.5 million in the prior year to $4,071,000 at the end of December 2022. The accounts receivable increased from $494,000 to $634,000. The increase is primarily due to road work that was done on a subdivision, which is to be reimbursed by owners of the Craigmore and Bailey subdivision. So there's an amount in receivables of $139,000 at the end of the year for that. Accounts payable increased from $539,000 to $680,000. The increase of approximately $140,000. $100,000 is simply timing of trade payables. There was a $30,000 lease levy accrual in there, a $41,000 increase in vacation payable. That was due to an increase in bank vacation hours and an increase in pay rates. Deferred revenue, note 6. I'll ask you to turn to note 6, which is on page 13. You can see there is typically there tends to be two components, sort of federal gas tax and other. At the end of the year, you are fully spent on your federal gas tax revenues. The other deferred revenue amounts includes reserve funds for a park fund in the amount of $55,959,000. That's the major item in the other deferred revenues. Municipal debt, note 7. So I'll have you just turn to the next page on page 14. So new in the year was the Infrastructure Ontario loan. It's repayable in semi-annual payments of $48,339, and the interest rate was at 4.41%. And this was new borrowing was in respect of the debenture for West Prairie Sound Recreational Center. Landfill closure and post-closure liability on the balance sheet. Again, we'll go to note 10. Find a description in respect of that category. You can see that the municipality is in the process of closing the Lees Road landfill site, which stopped receiving waste back in 2003. Total remaining closure and post-closure costs are estimated at $13,400, and that's why that number is on your statement of financial position as a liability. Next major category on the statement of financial position is the tangible capital assets. And I'll ask you to turn to Schedule 1, which is on page 20 of the package. So there's the various categories of capital assets, of course, and I would highlight that in the year there were additions of $838,000. You can see the second column from the right, $838,000. $84, and your amortization of the year was $813,544. So a net increase or net investment over and above the amortization of capital assets. Some of the additions, road additions of Balsam Road, $213,000, Tate's Island Road, $255,000, Broadbent Road, $11,000. There was some firefighting gear in the amount of $19,000. And there was a Dodge Ram truck for $81,000. And so at the end of the year, your net tangible capital assets increased from $13,680,000 in the prior year to $13,705,000 in the current year. But perhaps while we're just talking about the tangible capital assets, whenever you turn to page 11. So we have a restatement in these financial statements. So as a result of staff work this year in terms of completion of the asset management plan, there was a detailed review of various categories of capital assets. As a result of that, it was determined that there were some capital assets that needed to be written down. And so there was an adjustment for that. Because of that adjustment, we adjusted the financial statements in prior years, so we restated the prior years to reflect that change, basically, and then carried it through into the current year. Inventories of supplies, I'm back on the statement of financial position, page 4 again. Inventories of supplies, up from $35,000 to $61,954 this year, combination of price increases in sand and fuel rates. So when we add that all together, we take our financial assets, deduct our financial liabilities, and then add our non-financial assets. We have an accumulated surplus of $16,884,931, up from $15,999,000. I'd ask you to turn to page 5, statement of operations. Let's provide a few highlights, comments here. I know there's been a fair bit of detail previously presented to council on each of these various categories, but in the financial statements, as you say, you can see your property taxes increased in the year from $3,514,000 in the prior year to $3,761,000. Government transfers increased from $1,166,000 to $1,249,000. The primary increase in there was OCFI funding of approximately $96,000. Other revenue and investment income increased during the year. In addition, there was some subdivision income in the AR, which is in this other income category also. The subdivision income was approximately $100,000 in other income. Expenses, general government increased from $818,000 to $922,000. The increase of $104,000, various components, $18,000 in election council expenses, insurance increases, $14,000, IT support, $6,000, and increased amortization of $13,000. Transportation services, decreased from $1,584,000 to $1,500,000. There was less Moostop expense in the year. Repairs and maintenance decreased by approximately $32,000 in the year. Social and family services increased from $331,000 to $368,000. The increase was due to Belvedere Home for the Aged increase in its levy. Rec and culture up from $218,000 to $441,000. The increase was primarily due to the West Perry Sound Rec Center levy, which was new in 2022, of $161,000. Also, recreational janitorial contract increased by $18,000. So for the year overall, an annual surplus of $885,399. That's of course on a full PSA basis as opposed to on a cash basis, and that's the way it needs to be reported in the financial statements. Again, that surplus, $885,000 compared to $606,000 in the prior year. I'd ask you to turn to page 8 of the financial statements. Page 8. 9 and 10, these are all your account and policy notes. So these are essentially the decisions that are taken as to how the financial statements are presented. Part of our annual audit is to review these accounting policy notes to see whether there should be any changes, updates. We compare them to other similar size townships to see that your use of these policies is sort of comparable and consistent with other townships. And during the year, there were no changes, and we're comfortable that these are still the appropriate accounting policies. You can see on page 9, we talked about amortization of tangible capital assets. Here's some disclosure as to how long you amortize some of the various assets that you hold. As you can see, land improvements, 20 years. Buildings, over 50 years. Machinery and equipment, depending on the type of machinery equipment, anywhere from 10 to 20 years. Roads and bridges, obviously a longer period. Roads, 10 to 60 years, and bridges, 60 years. On page 12, note number 3, is information in respect of contributions to the unconsolidated joint boards. You can see there's the contributions to the DESA, $289,814 in the current year, Northbury Sound District Health Unit, $39,000, Belvedere Heights Home for the Aged, $78,000. You can see that was the increased levy in the current year as compared to $45,000 in the prior year. An EMS ambulance levy, $217,000 versus $204,000 in the prior year. School boards, this is something we review. You collect taxes on behalf of school boards and then remit those. But as you can see, at the end of the year, it was $32,709 still payable in terms of required to be remitted on of school these taxes that were collected on behalf of school boards. Trust funds. The trust funds are administered by the municipality, amounting to $51,485. We went through page 11 and 12 and 13. In the bottom of page 14, again, just additional financial information that helps in the reader's understanding of the financial statements. You have a credit facility agreement of $800,000, of which nil was used at the end of the year. Note number 9, page 15, employee benefits. Municipality has a liability related to unused employee vacation and overtime and retiring allowance amounting to $149,000 compared to $108,000 in the prior year. So, overall, a healthy financial position. Some new borrowing, of course, they're project specific. The account's well maintained. We had no difficulties or issues in the course of our audit, excellent cooperation, timely work. So overall, I'd say we feel very comfortable in providing a clean audit report and a healthy report on your financial position as of December 31st, 2022.
Excellent. Thank you. Well, might be questions now, and a lot of them have been answered already, things I had, so that's good. But if council has any particular questions, Councillor Askin, look like you're poised.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused, and maybe it can be clarified. On page number 5, the annual surplus from the actual from 22 was $885,399. When we worked on our budget, we didn't have an amount in our revenues, and the surplus taken into our revenues from 2022 to transfer over into our budget talks of 2023.
Well, I don't know whether Roshan can follow what you're asking. We'll need the microphone for him.
Sorry, Councillor Morty. Regarding the surpluses, we never transferred any surpluses in 2021 or 2022. So whatever surpluses we have, it's already part of the reserves, surplus and reserves.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Thank you.
Okay, I have a question on page 9, just for clarification, I guess. About halfway down, it says the municipality has a capitalization threshold of $3,000. I'm not sure what that means.
So with the threshold of 3,000, it means that over 3,000 we can capitalize and less than 3,000 we can expense. And which might be we need to discuss, because most of the municipalities have threshold up to the 5,000, so we might at some point we need to revise that amount.
Okay. Do we have any professional advice here on that?
Maybe I should speak to it. There's no hard and set rule as to what's the appropriate level to expense or capitalize. It clearly, the lower the threshold level, the more work there is in terms of capitalizing small amounts. So it really comes to a question of when does it make sense to see that asset on the books for a longer period of time, that you want to track that asset as opposed to writing it off in the current year. So I would agree with Professor Connors. In other similar size municipalities, 5,000 would probably be a more common capitalization level. But the larger the municipality, the larger this number becomes. So it's not like it's a hard and fast rule out there that it's $5,000.
Okay, good. Appreciate that. Thank you. Page 15, under employee benefits payable, the liability there. Should there be, now maybe it's already included, Rorschach, perhaps, should there be a percentage, something, an amount in the budget to cover this, say, worst case scenario that we're liable for this, and do we have something in there now that would take care of that if this is an expense all at once?
It's not part of our budget, though, but then that's the reason of accruing that amount that we know that at some point we have to pay. That's why we accrue that amount. So it's a liability for the township, and we just want to recognize that, you know, that's the amount we need to pay at some point if something happens.
So I guess that's the question. Is the money available? And it's not a line item then in the budget, so where does that money come from if something did happen and we had to pay off that debt? I guess worst case scenario is a number of employees leaving at once or something.
These are your public financial statements. So in your public financial statements, you have accrued for that liability. So the funding is there. Your surplus position already includes a provision for this liability.
Oh, okay. Yes, go ahead. Councilor Reynolds.
On page 12, where we have contributions to unconsolidated boards, would we expect to see our contribution to what's colloquially known as the pool in that section? In other words, I know it wasn't there in this year, but so I see it reflected there. Is that the appropriate place where we would see that?
Yes, we can put the that amount once the pool starts running. Then obviously we need, if there is a levy we need to pay, then we can put it there. Because right now it's under construction and the loan amount is there, the venture amount there, so right now we cannot put it there. But then once the pool is up and running, and if there is a levy we need to pay, then definitely we will show it there.
But in terms of the money that we've already paid to, I'm never sure of the organization name, Roshan, in other words, having to pay the lump sum that we had held reserved in this year, would that show up in the section is really more my question. I understand what, you know, what the status of the pool is right now, but the funds that we paid, roughly $775,000 regardless, where does that appear in the financial statement?
that's part of the. So it's already part of the expenses. So if you look at the some of the amounts we paid last year, $162,000, I think we paid it last year. That's part of the expense, already expensed. And that's why we borrowed the $775,000 to pay out the some of those expenses that then we are paying this year.
We had to pay the bulk of the funds that we had not repaid before this in this year, 2023, if I'm correct.
So, because you're not going to own that asset, that asset is not going to be on your balance sheet per se. So that's why it's not in your capital assets, and that's why it's being expensed. So that accounting treatment will continue. Throughout the life of that particular project and ultimately asset, it's not an asset that you own. It's a separate asset that is, say, you're contributing towards it, but you don't own that asset.
No, I understand that, but my question is, on page 12, where you have a heading saying contribution to one consolidated joint book list, wouldn't that be considered as part of those? A similar contributions to DSAB and the health unit, Belvedere and EMS. I know that we didn't make that payment in 2022, but in 2023, would we expect to see that contribution reported here?
I think that would fall into the category of that sort of fullness of disclosure. You're never prohibited from making additional disclosures. So if it was collectively felt that that's useful disclosure, you could have a separate note to the financial statements dealing with that particular project due to the magnitude of that project, and it could describe how much you contributed and sort of the history that way. So I could see developing that as a new note to the financial statements in 2023.
But that's my point. Obviously, it's a very major expense for the township, and it's important, I think, for the reader to understand that.
Yeah. I think moving forward, that's an excellent idea, because it's really confusing. Municipalities have contributed to this complex and the grant, of course, and yet municipalities really won't own it. It's the board that will own it, and it gets very confusing on what you're getting return on investment there. So it is like a donation, sort of, to the board.
and that's why I think it would be good. I think it'd be good disclosure to sort of track the history of that and report, so that your ratepayers would also understand. You know, we have this debt. We've contributed this amount, and then probably some descriptive, some narrative that would describe what the ratepayers, what they benefit by having it. Whether it was the use of this facility and something like that. So I can see developing that as a new note.
Okay.
My only other point is that whatever we did contribute to the last year, which if I'm right, Roshan, was 60,000 thereabouts, is that 62,000?
Yeah.
I mean, and it doesn't reflect it in this financial statement. I know it's just a note to the notes to the consolidated financial statements, I mean, to report exactly. But in the absence of a reporting, what was a relatively nominal amount for a retailer, in 2022, I'm just concerned that longer term that we miss the opportunity to record that, unless you think we can make a change. And I suppose that question's for you, Carl. But in other words, the long term effect of this is very substantial for the township. I would like it to be reported there, regardless of how much or how little that was paid in 2022, because I think it's part of a much bigger picture.
Isn't that recorded on page 14, municipal debt, seven, and so it's noting the $775,000 there, whereas the contributions on page 12 to unconsolidated boards are operating costs.
That's my understanding. When we talk about the joint boards, it's basically levy we pay to operate those boats, and this is the amount we pay to construct the pool. So it's kind of confusing, because if you put that amount in joint boards, it's not the, we pay that levy to operate for the operation purposes. We pay the levy for the constructing a pool. So I'm not sure if that would fit that there, but then definitely we can put a note or something mentioning that we paid that amount for the levy, even though we already put in the debenture, that why we borrowed the debenture and how much we are paying for that amount.
If the council would prefer, we could add a note to these financial statements, which we call a commitments note, and that commitments note could describe this transaction and what it is going, you know, what it has looked like so far, and what it is going to look like. It would be more of a narrative than a table at this point, given the amounts to date that have been expended in 2022. But certainly, certainly that's a note that would provide additional good information as we're discussing this matter.
I think that would help the public, certainly, to get the narrative. Now, it'll keep changing as well, because there are a number of costs that haven't even been talked about much yet. Capital reserve costs and operating costs, and not just the construction costs. So that, as you say, you'll get it down and on paper, but it may keep changing as well. As we accumulate more debt. Another question on page 12. I'm just interested in, for Belvedere, how that went from 45,000 to 78,000. We were led to believe that the costs for Belvedere were continually going down. That looks like it's up 75%. Am I missing something here?
So last year they gave us the credit of roughly around 40,000, so that's why, you know, they charged only one invoice or maybe one amount instead of, you know, charging the full amount. They gave us the credit. That's why you see the difference.
Okay, and what was it normally? Just going back, was it up around 100,000? Was it?
I think I don't remember, but then around 100,000. Yeah.
Okay. Cemetery board as such, because we have a cemetery committee. Do we have an actual board that should be operating on it? I know we used to, with its own minutes and meetings and accounts, or are we all rolled now into the municipal figures? On whether Roshan can help or not. I'm just a little confused whether we still have a cemetery board as such. Because if so, we haven't had a meeting forever.
I'm not sure about that. Because I know that last 2 years we didn't have any board meeting or any committee meeting. So,
there used to be an actual board that operated pretty well on its own. They had their own chair. We had one representative of the council sit on it. They hired their own employees. They looked after all of the cemeteries and looked after all the plots. Much of that has been now transferred into the municipal office. So I'm just not sure if that board still exists. It's still listed here, but. Mm-hmm.
So the numbers would still be the same. There's a segregation of the numbers, and the question is whether you whether you're still maintaining an independent board that is responsible for those amounts. I'm not sure that you would have passed a resolution to discontinue having a board. I think it's probably just less the board, no one's being appointed to sort of fulfill that responsibility. So you could certainly look at disbanding that board, and then this note could eliminate sort of that there's a board for the cemetery, if you will.
Right. I remember years back, there was a resolution to disband, I guess, at a certain point. And then what happened was it sort of became all of council sitting on that board. And so it was transferred into the municipal realm. And we just looked after it in the office. But yeah, I'm just thinking we probably have to reword that, because I don't think it sits as a separate board on its own anymore. Well, I'm all out of questions. Many of them you've answered as we've been along. So
can we just summarize that we would create an additional commitments note then in these financial statements for the pool project that we've described it, essentially?
That would be excellent, yes. Because
Russia, I mean, we'll work together and come up with that quickly and then add an additional note for that.
Sure.
And if you can get any more figures from the Recreation and Cultural Center Board, that's great, because things are a little confusing right now.
Well, I'm not the member of the...
No, I know I am, and I'm confused. That's why I need some outside help here.
His fingers pointed.
Okay, any questions from rest of council, from the public, on Zoom, the figures that are in front of us?
I can just one question. So, in addition to that you were going to put on there about the pool, were you also saying about putting like another schedule listing everything that the township's contributed and done? Or is that going to be included in that one little thing? A note?
Just in that one note. Given the magnitude of the contributions in 2022 weren't that large yet. So it's more than you've entered into a significant responsibility, if you will. And so if we can provide some detail around that, I think that would be useful.
Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming in person. We appreciate that. We try to roll our in-person meetings as much as possible. And we really appreciate this and the great detail. And everything worked well with Roshan, so that was great.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you again. We have resolution 23-426, moved by Councilor Zulak, second by Councilor Hassa. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCubbin has hereby received a deputation from Patrick Hill and Associates, Chartered Accountants, presenting the draft 2022 financial statements. Any further discussion? Call the question. We'll have to do it every quarter.
Councilor Merlikowski?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hegman?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Horn?
Yes. That's 5 yeas, no nays. Gary, thank you. To the adoption of the minutes of previous meetings, there is resolution 23-427, moved by Councilor Keckinen, second by Councilor Zulak. It resolved the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullough has hereby approved the minutes of June 6, 2023 regular meeting of Council and the June 8, 2023 special closed meeting of Council as circulated. Any discussion of those minutes? Call for the vote then.
Councilor Morley Haskin?
Yes.
Councilor Mike Hegman?
Yes.
Councilor Nick Ryland?
Yes.
Councilor Debbie Zulak?
Yes.
Mayor David Horn?
Yes. 5 yeas, no nays. Carried. On to 15.3 now under planning matters. Have resolution 23-428, moved by Councilor Keckinen, second by Councilor Zulak. Be resolved, the Council of the Corporation of the Township of McCullough has hereby received a memo
dated June 20th, 2023, from Deputy Clerk Planning Assistant Carly Britton, and the letter dated June 20th, 2023, from Brad Roberts. And further, that condition number 6 in resolution number 22-236 be deleted, except for the recommendation that a site evaluation report be prepared. And further, that the applicant is to pay the appraised value of the closed road allowance abutting 211 Burnett Road for $20,500. And no sense. So we'll open this up for discussion. And we'll start with council, but then certainly we have the applicant here as well, and we also have Dr. Christie to comment. So council, first of all, with this resolution. While you're reviewing, we have the applicant, Mr. Roberts, so if you wish to speak, we have your letter, but you can summarize that for us, I suppose, and you've heard the resolution that's sitting here, so you can go from there and comment.
Okay, thank you. First of all, thanks, Council, for all your work on all that budget stuff, because I'm lost on much of that. Sorry, that's kind of... Okay.
Appreciate all the work that you guys put into doing this. The paperwork is incredible. Really, the only thing that we're asking council for is a reduction in the appraisal price. I think everything else is agreed based on the resolution that I just heard there. The 1.4 acres of land that is 20 meters wide, very unusual shape. This was a surprise to us when we purchased the property. The road allowance was noted, we are aware of it, but the practical use of the property and the driveway, with no survey marks on the property, we assumed that the driveway was on the property, and we assumed that the buildings were appropriately set back from the... We didn't pull a survey. We didn't put that as one of our conditions to close. I didn't put it in my report, but the house number, the green municipal civic address sign, is, if you will, on the north side of the road allowance on a post. I can show you a picture on my phone. I took it today thinking it might be useful and pass it around if you'd like. But so when we went to purchase the property, in all intents and purposes, it looked like it was the boundary of the property, and here's the driveway, and here's a house, and everything was on the property. And so we get to doing the survey, and we went, oh, this is a huge surprise. Road allowance aside, the setbacks is the biggest, perhaps the biggest issue. The buildings are 3 and 10 feet from the side of the property line. And the pictures in our original report there, it would be impossible, practically impossible, to put a driveway in, not touch the road allowance, from Burnett's Road, crossing in front of the building, the cottage that's there, and to enter the driveway. If you turn to the survey close-up of Hardy Crescent from L. E. Maughan and Associates, this page here, if it's helpful.
It's right near the end of our package there. It's
yes.
Two or three sheets.
Coming in off of Burnett's Road, the gravel driveway is approximately in the middle of what is the road allowance proper. And as you come in, you can see the driveway widen and get very close to the house and the cement patio that's there, and you can see the intersection line of the road allowance going over a corner of the patio. And then you can see the road allowance coming within 1.2 meters of the garage. My point is that there is no physical way for us to access the property and enter the garage with the vehicle without touching the property of the road allowance. I want to pause here for you to understand what I'm talking about there. Is that any questions? So we're kind of in a difficult situation. We're sort of forced to buy a piece of property in order to access our property. And we put a lot of money into this already that was not really in our budget for this purpose and site survey that was requested. A survey of the road allowance that we never anticipated. And now to receive a bill, if you will, for $20,000 for a piece of property that is of no value to anyone. On an open market, nobody's going to pay $20,000 for this particular acre. They can't do anything with it. They can't put a survey on it. They can't put a building on it. They can't put a septic tank on it. And so we've proposed in our letter what we consider to be more reasonable per acre value proposed amount to purchase the lot at. And we're not trying to point fingers. I mean, obviously an error was made in the past. We're not trying to point fingers, but somewhere, you know, we got to work with council to figure this out. Us bearing a $20,000 bill is probably not the best solution, I don't think. I'm happy to answer questions.
Okay, Councilor Zulak.
Okay, just a question. So when you purchased that property, did you had it surveyed, did you not know then?
We did not have it surveyed when we purchased it. We were working off of existing municipal drawings.
So isn't that?
And there's actually no formal survey on this property. It's sort of, it's the in-between piece between the survey of the subdivision that is Manitowoc Estates Road and the Smith Pine Crescent group to the north. And it's this weird pie-shaped lot that just was sort of left over.
Okay.
We went looking for...
I understand that, but when you purchase a property, did it tell you where the property lines were?
No. There was no formal stakes on the property, and there was no formal measurements.
Isn't that something that you should probably do when you purchase a piece of property, is to know exactly what piece of property you're going to get?
We asked our lawyers to pull the...
And they didn't do it.
What they did, but they said there's some ambiguity in terms of the planning documents. And I would have never have guessed that somebody would have put a driveway on not their property. I assumed that when the green sign and the driveway was there, I assumed the road allowance was there, not on our property. Who would have thought a road would have been 2 feet away from a house? Again, I'm not trying to dredge
up.
Okay,
I'm just questioning because I know.
We asked all the questions we possibly could of our lawyers at the time, and this didn't come up.
Other questions from council? Patrick wants to speak to this, or no? Well, we'll open up to the public. We have people on Zoom as well as in person. If you have any particular comments, just need your name, please.
Does it show up on air if somebody's going to ask?
Yeah, the mic should be open if they're going to speak.
Oh, okay, I see.
But I don't see anybody opening a mic right now.
Okay.
So once again, if there's anybody on Zoom who wishes to speak to this. Okay, there were some emails, I don't know whether you're aware of them or not, that came through from residents. And I'll just run through some of these and get your opinion on them and what you thought council has to consider these. So, one was dealing with the rezoning, obviously, because there were, first of all, the John Jackson, the planner, had indicated no rezoning was required, pretty well followed the lines, I think, that were there initially. The question came up about the rural zoning that's on there and whether it should be rural residential. That's another thing we have to consider, whether it should be rezoned to that with fewer uses available, because rural does offer a large number of uses that could be employed. Now, we have to also consider, I think, that when those waterfront lots were developed, the property across, the property you're referring to, was designated rural at that point, and still is. And the one on Stormy Point was sort of a split zoning. There was a rural and waterfront as you go up Stormy Point Road, and I think they still are. So that's the question we have right now, is moving forward, is the rural zoning that should stay in place, in which case you wouldn't have to rezone to rural residential, or should it be considered because of the location? And as I said, when people bought those waterfront lots, the property that you're referring to was zoned rural at that time. I'm not saying they knew that or it would be even investigated, but they were rural, they weren't rural residential. So that's consideration for council. The other was the site evaluation that was done. And they're recommending 30 meter setback instead of 10 on the waterfront property. That would be lot 2, I believe. And that would have to be written in and registered on title. And that would have to be a rezoning there with the site report being referenced. And also a question that has come up recently was the lot addition also has some waterfront associated with it that's in a non-development zone according to the site evaluation report by Fricourt. So whether that should be included as well as part of this non-development. I'm just putting those out there as things that came through in the last few days.
And that's why in my letter, although I understood my letter was predominantly addressing the road allowance, I put the zoning in there because it's all part of the same package in terms of our total cost in order to complete this severance. It's all part of the same cost. I'm not aware of any rezoning costs. We have no idea what that budget may be. We very purposely, as I said in my letter, we were very purposeful in trying to simplify our proposal to not require any rezoning or minor variance requests of council or anything. So the lot lines were drawn as close as we possibly could to the existing zoning map in, I'm sure you guys are all aware of it, but in Ted Davidson's report.
Now we had two different versions at different times. So.
Yeah, I'm on page 15 of Ted Davidson's report, zoning bylaw 9512. This is reproduced, I understand, from the official plan available on the township website. So it's not something Mr. Davidson created, he copied it from the township. We were very purposeful to design our severance proposal so that the lot lines fell within as close as possible to the waterfront zoning and the rural zoning on this image. Okay? In terms of practical use, the waterfront lot won't be touched. Not in my lifetime. I understand that you have to deal with things, but I'm only 55. So, several councils away before we have to look at that. I also understood from the bylaws that a newly created lot had to be 5 acres. In the council bylaws, township bylaws, in terms of subdividing a piece of property, the requirement is 60 meters of frontage onto a travel road.
20.4.
And 5.
0.4 hectare.
And 5 acres.
Less than 5 acres.
Yeah.
0.4 hectare would be 1 acre.
Okay, at the time that we put our severance proposal in, I believe, because we tried to make a smaller lot, and the lots that you see in our proposal was to be in compliance with what we understood the bylaws to be in Jump Jackson, and our
sure they verified that at the time, so I'm not a planner, I'm not an expert. But.
No, you may have been caught up in that there was a transition taking place. The official plan has this, I think it says 0.8, and the zoning bylaw with 95-12, which was the original, that was 0.4, and then there was a new zoning bylaw proposed 2019-53, was it?
23.
Okay. And that was increasing to the 0.8, but the third reading was repealed, so it reverted back to 95-12. So you may have been caught up. I'm not sure the dates when all this was happening.
Okay.
But right now we're sitting at 0.4 hectare.
So our intent, right, we're more than the 0.8. Our intention was that we would be in compliance with that, and therefore the rezoning concept of needing to rezone to rural residential because an acre is really only appropriate for a house and a pool or a garage or whatever. It's not like you eat, you know, a ton of chickens on a 1 acre lot or something. So that's why we don't think, Patrick can speak to this, we don't think that we need to rezone that. We tried to do our research in advance. In terms of the split zone, if you will, the 68-acre parcel of land formerly known as 211 Burnett's Road is split zoned.
Right.
As is 253 Burnett's, sorry, yes, 253 Burnett's Road that's owned by my partner, Dr. Robin Reka Gabor. With the lot addition, we don't see any need to rezone that because it's identical to the lot it's being added to. With all due respect.
Well, yeah, I'm not sure your partner, how the lot is described. It says waterfront. Is it a non-development piece of waterfront there, or can you develop on the waterfront? Because the piece that's being added would be non-development.
It's all floodplain.
Even where he is?
No, where he is, there is a building.
Right.
There is a cottage site.
Right.
So
you're saying, by the very fact that it's a floodplain, it's not development anyway, is that what you're saying? It doesn't have to go by.
Practically, you couldn't build a building down there.
Yeah. I'm just going by the Fry Corps, what they had suggested. I think they said 1,000. What was the distance there for waterfront?
30 meters back from the highway.
Oh, no, I know, but on the whole piece of property that you own, what the waterfront was, and all of it was
they,
not developed.
They only looked at the waterfront lot of proposed lot 2.
Right.
Mr. Mayor, I'm here if you need to ask me any questions. Ted Davidson.
Yeah, we'd asked earlier, Mr. Davidson, if anybody on Zoom had any comments, so you're welcome to join in.
Well, if you have any questions, I sent my comments in, I believe, and you must have those comments.
Yes, we have them, and we'll be deliberating. You've heard our resolution?
The issue that I have, Mr. Mayor and members of the council, is that we have a situation where we have a Class 1 fish habitat along the shoreline. We have a environmental report that says there should be a 30-year setback. We have a bylaw that only requires a 10-year setback. The only way to really deal with that is to have a site-specific zoning that requires that 30-year setback, or to have a Section 5126 consent agreement to have that setback applied with. Now, with respect to split zonings, we don't want split zonings in the township. We have split zonings where there are areas of environmental protection, for example, and floodplains because they have enough fallout property, but we don't really split zone properties in the rural as well as waterfront. They have totally different uses. And here we have a situation where this entire property is designated waterfront, not rural, waterfront, but it's split zoned into rural and waterfront. Or whatever reason. I think it would be best for the owner. what the zoning of their property is. And my understanding is that the council is in the process of selling a portion of Harding Crescent. And that should figure into this contenda. I don't know whether that that sale has taken place, but with respect to the south portion of the Harding Crescent or not. But I think there was a resolution back in this council indicating that that process should be followed. The north portion of Harding Crescent, I think the township was retained to add to their portion of the rural lot that's on Harding Crescent. Which brings into question whether or not there's sufficient frontage for proposed lot 3 on Burnett Road.
Yes, there is.
I don't know because I haven't seen any survey. Those are just, I would like to assist this applicant getting this through, but I also want to ensure that the township makes the right decision in indicating to future owners that the property is property.
Okay, thank you. Maybe Mr. Roberts wants to address some of those concerns or put it back to council?
Sure. We were very clear in our instructions to first LUMON and then IBW surveyors to make sure, and I was physically on site with the surveyors when the survey was completed, and there is more than 60 meters of frontage at the north end of Hardy Crescent on Lot 3, fronting onto Burnett's Road. There is more than enough room for a driveway there, and we're in compliance with the bylaws.
Okay. Back to Mr. Davidson, one question there. You mentioned about site specific for Lot 2, and you also mentioned 5126 agreement. Maybe you could just distinguish one. I think council has control over, the other is planning board, is it not? My understanding that we could recommend a 5126, but it's the planning board that has to do that? Maybe Patrick.
They're the only legislative authority that can do that.
That's all.
Yes, it can be.
I did see in the memorandum that the planning board, if McKellar approved the conditions, they would stamp the deed, etc. Well, it has to go through the planning board. You can't ignore the plan. And my understanding is that this application was deferred by the planning board back in 2022, I believe.
It may have been deferred.
Never come back to the planning board. The planning board is the only one that can basically indicate, here are the conditions of the consent. Now, if you want to contest them, then you go to the Ontario Land Trust.
Go ahead, Patrick.
Okay, so a 5126 agreement would be an easy thing to add as a condition to recognize the Fryecore report.
So is that something that this resolution I just read, is that that should be in there then as a condition, or is that going to the bylaw itself?
It could be, if you don't want to do a site-specific zoning to implement the conditions of the private protocol.
Right, but I guess the question is, if council decides on a site-specific for lot two, proposed lot two, then that's council's decision, whereas if it goes to the planning board for 5126, there's no guarantee of anything like that passing.
It's just an agreement between, it's just an agreement.
And that's an enforceable agreement?
Yes.
And it would be registered?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The 5126 agreement is not between the planning board and the applicant. It's between the municipality and the applicant.
Right, but it's a condition of consent that could be implemented as a condition of consent.
The other issue is the rural properties and whether or not they should be rezoned to an RR zone rather than an RU zone. Similar to the ones, I think you just built with a consent on with a funding lane or whatever it is. It was an RR zone. I think it's just around the corner from this property.
I can speak to that.
And the RR zone has restricted uses for smaller properties and doesn't allow for exactly antelope, etc. I think that's what I think should be done here because we have a waterfront, the land is designated waterfront in the official plan. We're not asking that the official plan be amended because I think there's language in the official plan that says 150 meters from the shoreline. But if you're doing that, then you have to look at, well, what's the proper zoning for this property? Is it rural residential, which these lots are being created for, or are we're not creating a farm here? There's no priming activity either. Kennel use here. Or contractors, a yard, etc. Hopefully. So maybe you want to restrict the use. But I don't know. What is the status of the sale of the RE process?
That's a good question. We could ask Mr. Roberts here right now. I know he's in the process, but we're still debating the appraised value. But I'm just not sure whether that comes first. I mean, that was your suggestion, I think, Mr. Davidson, that be dealt with first and then looking at potential rezoning.
Well, my concern is if you don't do the sale of RE's precedent and add it as a lot addition to 211 Burnett Road, then you have a minor variance situation. Because I think it's been indicated that the house on that road, on that lot, does not meet the setback requirement. So are we going to approve a consent that doesn't meet the setback requirements for the existing building?
We're happy to resolve the hard crescent issue whatever way council wants to do it. We can do it through a minor variance. We can do it through a reasonable price purchase of the property. $20,000 doesn't seem reasonable for 1 acre of unusable property, given the fact that there is some encroachment or lack of setbacks or previous issues that I think this council unfortunately has to take some responsibility on for past councils or staff members' actions. I'm not trying to point fingers. We've just got an issue that we need to deal with. We're happy to have the Fry Corp report formalized through 53 whatever, or site plan, or whatever is the
least expensive and most control at council meeting. I'm not particularly concerned about getting approved at the planning board meeting. We've had multiple conversations, John Jackson and Patrick, and in preparation for our application to make sure that we were in compliance. So I'm not worried about, we don't intend to change that waterfront property at all. That's the whole point of all this. We didn't want somebody to come in here and chop it up into three Muskoka-sized massive buildings that are 100 feet apiece or 200 feet frontage and ruin the back bay where the turtles nest and the fish are, blah, 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 okay? So I think that the first issue, as I see it, if I may, is let's resolve some way of formalizing the Fry Corp report into so that there's a 30-meter setback on a waterfront lot. And that's one issue. So however you guys want to do that, we're happy to do that. Okay?